Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I traveled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
Hello, you're very welcome to another episode of The Big Interview. This time, our guest is Tim Sherwood, a Premier League winning captain with Blackburn Rovers, a championship winner with Portsmouth, RA. Also somebody I love listening to on radio and television because Tim tells it as it is. Here's Tim. So amongst the, you know, that league winning side, I remember the battle as you go up each season and your finishes. The real battle was United.
Yeah.
And there was one, I remember I was out running, listening to it on the radio in the dark and at Aberdeen, and all, I was there with a little earphone in. I think Kevin Gallagher scores in a 1-0 win there. And that felt like the breakthrough moment because United had, never mind the traditional rivals, they'd seen you coming, Alec and Kenny. It was bound to be personal. Mm. They've had serious ups and downs over the years. Fergie hated Hansen. Hansen and Kenny were, you know, like Dean and Bing. What was that rival? The whole thing about taking United down, which is what you had to do. What was that like? What was the pressure like? What was the anticipation like? What were they like to play?
It was the only rivalry. You know, can't think of anyone who'd come to the party other than that. It was just them or us.
And for a long time, it's just totally nip and tuck.
Them or us, and it was blind. There was obviously mind games as well where they tried to take Alan, didn't they, when Alan came. And
Kenny had tried to get Roy, I think, and United had just got there first.
I remember Jack Walker, when they bid for Alan, he said, yeah, you can have Alan, but we got to have Cantona. As a joke, he knew there was no chance. So he was basically saying to them, why are you bullies? Hmm. Well, you can't bully me. Why are you trying to bully me? That Alan Shearer is going to win us the title. And thankfully, they couldn't persuade Alan to go there. When Fergie presented him at the awards, Alan got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Fergie presented it. And Richard Keys was hosting. And he gets him on the stage and he says to Alan, you know, you're talking about going to Man United. He said, if you would have gone to Man United, you would have won more things. And Alan said, if I would have gone to Man United, he would have won more things. It's a great answer. But I think Alan was just integral, wasn't he, for everything we did. And when you look at like Shearer, Batty, Lasso, Flowers, Hendry,
Berg,
yeah, Henning, Ripley, Wilcox, all men. And we weren't phased. No matter what they wanted in the game, we would have it. If it was going to be a kicking match or it was going to be a technical game, whatever, we could handle ourselves in that. So we wasn't phased. When we're looking across at Bruce, Pallister, early days were a little bit rough. You know, you got Robson, who's like just a legend in my eyes. I say to people now, Brian Robson could play in the Premier League now and be the best player, best midfield player. He could tackle, he could score, he'd run the game, his physicality, he refereed the game, he did everything. Everyone was in awe of him. He was just brilliant. And I still believe he could play now.
It's underestimated then how good he was because there was less coverage.
Yeah.
The old Premier League thing now compared to, but he's all time.
Just the governor. I mean, he's just unbelievable. He's just, but that was, I grew up looking and watching him, yeah, and obviously he had them, and when he played for England, he always seemed to pick up injuries, didn't he? And you could understand, when you play against him, you understand why. I mean, he's just so robust. It's all over it. I mean, he would bully you, technically he was gifted, he could arrive at the right time, you were talking about earlier, about scoring goals. And that was, they built the Manchester United way. There was a way of not only on the pitch, but a way they behaved outside of it. And Fergie almost, and not only Fergie, but likes of Brian and Brucey and Pallister and Dennis Irwin and all these legends there, Sparky, they give you, they know Manchester United and they had this swagger and had this aura about them. But we wasn't phased. You know, we look across in the tunnel.
People talk about Watford, yes.
When I was at Norwich, yes. When I was at Blackburn, you just look straight ahead because we know they're worrying about us as we're worrying about them. You know, but they've obviously Eric, Kanchelskis. You know, they've got all these players going through. And then Keno comes and the younger generation. They're all getting taught along the way how to be Man United pupils. And it wasn't just on the pitch, it was off the pitch as well. But we did not feel fazed by them whatsoever.
You've set that up beautifully because, again, for those who either watched you or don't remember it so well, they're aware that you won the title. You've talked a lot about the people in the dressing room and how they matched up to the behemoth, the giants at Old Trafford. Yet, you were captain. Why did he choose you?
I don't know. It was really interesting the way he told me. We were in pre-season in Ireland and Kevin Moran was captain, obviously a legend of the game, great guy. And he called me to his room at the hotel. And when I went into the room, Kevin's in there as well. Mm. So Kenny said to me, this old fella's getting a little bit too long in the tooth for it. He's obviously spoke to Kevin. He said, he's not going anywhere, he'll be around, but we've had a little chat and we think it might be time for you to start leading out the side. So I said, yeah, I think you're right, yeah, I think you're right. He knew he'd get that sort of reaction. So he said, we agree, Kev? And Kevin said, yeah. Because he obviously had Kevin on the inside. Because the captain is the extension of the manager. Not to be a snitch, but just to give him honest views and opinions. So he must have said to Kevin, what's he like in the dressing room?
Yeah.
What's he like around? Is he overruled by the rest of them? We're signing some big-name players. And Kevin would have said, not fazed. Yeah, and he probably said the right things, and that is why they made it. It was interesting that they made that transition and that introduction.
How they
to
did
catching,
it was strange. That's a strange way to do it.
To do it
even
to
if
me.
It's pre-packed and whatever. Even once you've agreed to speak like that in front of the outgoing captain, obviously they knew what they were doing, but it's an odd way to do it.
Yeah.
Did you want it previously? Did you have any inkling it might come?
I just didn't think it would change me anyway. I didn't understand what it means. It's not like being a captain of cricket, is it? You know, it's like you're captain, obviously a big honour. You know, so when they start signing Shearers and obviously Hendry was a leader. Mm. There was loads of leaders, loads of guys who could be captain, a lot of men of the side, a lot of players who moved on to other clubs and been coaches and managers and captains elsewhere. But it wasn't, because I had an armband on my arm, it wasn't going to change the way I played or acted. I was going to be the same person anyway.
So it changed nothing in you in terms of you
responsibility.
Think, well, what do I have to do with this? What's it for?
I think it was a good way of. We talked about Norwich, didn't we, the Dave Williams thing, and that was a penny dropping moment for me when he said, you know, Tim Sherwood going to do what he can do for Tim Sherwood or what he's going to do for Norwich. And I think this, Kenny knew there was a little bit of devil in me still. Even though I'd realised the penny had dropped that I was actually at this, got this opportunity to play this magnificent game and get paid for it. And it was probably worthwhile me getting the most out of it I possibly could in a Milner sort of style, even though he's gone on to completely different levels of fitness and, what's the right word, his approach and his professionalism to it, he's took it to another level.
He'll do the yoga, he'll eat and drink differently from everybody else. It's a total exclusion of everything else until the career is done. It's monastic.
Yeah.
He's obviously happy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make him this stupid image of being boring, because he's not.
No.
Very clever, very funny, passionate about the game, tough as anything. Mm. You have to also be tough. But yeah, he's still quite unusual. But you needed to, or it helped you go.
I think there was still an element there.
Should we say a bit of Devon or whatever? You're not just talking on the pitch.
No, I'm talking off.
There was a nice bit of living going on.
Yeah. And I think that he would have felt it was an extra responsibility and I would take it on board, and I did.
I've been to the training ground. I seem to remember it's down a windy old lane. I think it used to be a mental hospital or something like that. It's a creepy old place sometimes.
Mm. Not then. I mean, Kenny was almost left the club by then. When they built Brockle, we trained on a public park.
All right. These are the surprises you get. Okay, I didn't know that.
We trained on a public park. We got changed at the main ground, Ewood Park, which is not Ewood Park like it is now. You know, it was like two armchairs and a sofa at the other end. You know, we drove in convoys, filling up cars, 2-3 miles to the training ground. We had to stop training every day to let the funeral procession through, because there was a cemetery through our...
True.
Every day we would stop training. Tony Parks, who was a coach up there, Asa Hartford, other coaches we had, they would have to go early, make sure there's no dog shit on the pitch.
No, I knew that was coming.
And then they cleaned it up. And Kenny used to have that mentality of, and I've heard him say it about Liverpool's training, Millwood.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the facility. It's about people in it. And he's right. It's not about the trimmings. Mm. It's about who's actually making it work. And we used to know the everyone. I would talk to you, and I'm sure you've heard it millions of times, the tea ladies. And we know they were family to us. You know, but Kenny helps to create that environment, because he had that environment at Liverpool. And it was an easier task to take it from
there. I don't understand any other way. It has to be like that.
Mm.
It doesn't matter whether they're the person cleaning the shit off the public park, or they're the driver, or they're the guy who, you know, washes the kit or makes the tea. It doesn't matter.
Mm.
They've all got to be pulling in the same direction. It's all got to feel like everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's no reason you wouldn't treat them like important people just because they're doing a job that might seem menial, or it might seem unimportant because you only see them once a week. I don't understand any other way.
Mm. But it's not like that now. That's completely different. I think it'll be, in Liverpool, I would suggest, would be the same.
No, well,
it's easy to be that way when you win.
We spent a lot of time at Melwood, and it's a lot, and they give you the role of it. They're overly generous, I think. They're really open, and you'll meet with the players, or you wander about, or different staff will stop and have a chat with you. And you can see that, irrespective of him not being brought up in his country, and irrespective of Jürgen not being a Liverpool fan, he absolutely has brought that. Not only been taught it and said, this is what we used to do at Liverpool, that's him to a T, and it seems to be making a difference. Because everybody is on the same page.
But you got that impression Brendan did that as well, though.
Yeah, I believe you. We know Brendan. He's agreed to do this interview. He used to talk. He phoned me when he was still at Chelsea. Could he come across and watch Barcelona training, because he wanted to learn. And people that work at Celtic now say that he left behind a really good structure at Lennox Town, the training ground, for Neil Lennon to come back and inherit again. And yeah, I agree with you. And obviously, Brendan's younger than me, but some people are old school in terms of, irrespective of their age, what their values are, what they think will be important to the working atmosphere. Like you say, Kenny said, about, because Melwood is still not, you know, all that. And if you, it should be natural that if you're training in a public park, when you've got multi-million pound players, it should be that it's a distraction. It's too windy. That somebody want, a dog wants to run on the pitch, or you spend too much time chasing the ball because there ain't no, you know, fences. And it should have been in theory, it should have been a handicap to you winning the title, and yet it wasn't because of, you know, attitude, the people, the quality.
I think that year '95, we would have just moved in, maybe into there, but it was an integral part. I mean, it was a building process from, I mean, it was quite quick. The development from finishing fourth in the first year of the Premier League in 92 to finishing second. And then that following year, we knew we'd win it. You know, it was almost...
At what stage?
Well, we knew we'd win it at the beginning of the season. We felt, when we finished fourth, if you would have asked me then, do you think you can win the league next year? I would have said, no. Not that Kenny would want to hear that, but I would have thought, they're just a little bit too far ahead of us.
There's work to do.
Man United, I just don't think we were ready. But when we finished second... It was all, if you would ask me that pre-season, will you, I'd say, yeah, we'll win it. We'll win it. We'll overturn them this year. We'll win the league.
Because you could feel the gap was narrower.
Yeah, because I feel the belief was there as well. I think there was more belief amongst the squad that we could not only beat them, but we would roll everyone else over.
You said in pre-season you knew, but on the last day of the season, did you know? What was that like?
Horrible. It was the worst ever, because we were 12 points clear at one stage.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, if you didn't want anyone chasing, it was Man United. Serial winners, know how to get over the line, great players. Eric done us a great favour, didn't he, by kung fu kicking the kid in Selhurst Park. So it was a massive blow to him.
Lost 4 or 5 months, didn't he?
He was just such a character, and great for the Premier League. And he was just such an important part of what they were doing, you know. And to lose them for that amount of time, it would be like us losing Shearer.
Yeah.
So it was a massive plus for us. You know, we were just, I know they appealed the ban, the length of the ban. You know, you're glued to the telly hoping that it doesn't get reduced. And thankfully, I don't think it was too much. But then... We just had to come. Kenny was always like, well, he knew, didn't he? I mean, he knew how to win leagues, Kenny. He knew how to win leagues as a manager, and he knew how to win it as a player. So he was always, well, he's the man. He's been over the line. So let's follow his lead. Why wouldn't you? And that's what we did. And he just kept us really focused, never ever spoke about winning or losing leagues, just one game at a time, always boring shit cliches. But that's how it was. But then when we started losing, they continued to win, and the gap was closing, you get doubts. For me, I dream about that time when I'm going to be the first up to lift that trophy, and that could be taken away from me. It was just unthinkable. And it was sleepless nights, and that night, you know, we listened to all that shit. Oh, Liverpool don't want Man United to win it, so they're not going to try. We knew they were going to try. I know John Barnes. I played with him. Jamie Redknapp was my mate. I know all the others. Listen, ideally, if they could pick someone to win the league, they would rather us than Man United. But not
for the next 90 minutes, they're on it.
Any professional player does not. And they've got no pressure on them. They've got nothing to play for. And that makes them even more dangerous. I mean, the fans wanted us to win it. The Liverpool fans at Anfield, of course they did. I mean, they would rather Jamie didn't bend that one in and Johnny Barnes equalising and Jamie bending that one in the last minute. But we played a minute of that game knowing we were champions of the Premier League. Which I just walked around.
It's funny, because you're not only talented, but you are self-confident, and you've got strong character. But it affected you. That's what interests me, that the psychology of, irrespective of knowing, I've got soldiers all around me, who are immensely talented, the manager's been the course, but, and like I say, you're not short of a mix of talent and character, yet in the weeks building up to it, it did get to you.
It get to me, but I couldn't show anyone else. I mean, it got to all of us. We would all admit that. I think what got to us, the fact that we have had our hands on this. I mean, we've been 12 points clear and someone's pulling them away from us and could take the trophy up the road to them. I mean, it's just unthinkable. So I think that was what it was. I mean, we can suffer I think when you're ahead, you're such a, so far ahead in a race, for someone to come and catch you, and it's almost your doing. I mean, we're dropping points, we're coming back to them, you know, and they must have rubbing their hands thinking we've got them exactly where we want them. No, it was just that thought of, if we didn't win it, we knew full well it would damage us so much we wouldn't win it the next year.
I hear that. I wasn't fishing for that, but that puts it in context. Mm. You're not just thinking about now, but like,
what damage?
What happens if?
Yeah.
Then that's for a competitive man.
Yeah. I mean, you still live with that now, yeah. Wouldn't I? I mean,
yes.
I mean, I do a lot of media stuff now, and they introduced me as Premier League winner.
Does it still sound quite nice?
But yeah, I just don't like talking about it.
No. God, that's how you used to do petite as well, isn't it? You've just done me there when I was preparing to move off with the ball. Can I give you a compliment?
Let me tell you that one. I always think, and I always feel for him, and I can't help thinking about Phil Jones's face. That Aguero goal, even though Man United have won it multiple times, that still keeps them up. That Man United celebrating and Aguero scoring against QPR, last kick of the season, they still wake up in the middle of the night. I know, I've been in that position. I know they are not ever in their lives will ever get over that, even though they've won multiple titles.
The scars are big.
Massive.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm going to think about them more sympathetically now. I think I remember chuckling on the day, and we've interviewed a lot of people who were in that City team and who we like, and it's a really interesting story about, you know, the psychology of them chucking it away against 10 men, and they think they're going to be in the position you thought you were at Anfield that day. So there's a lot of scarring going on, and maybe some of the City scars aren't completely healed because they're still in their worst nights dream about, like, did Aguero go in and did we lose it?
I mean, it's topical at the moment because everyone says who's the best foreign player because he's breaking all these records and all that. And I always come back to, if you have to give me one last kick of the game and put someone on a chance, he's already shown he can do it. He knows how important that was. He's just got this ice in his veins and this special quality.
But you've just said best foreign. You didn't say best foreign striker. So, like, you know, I'm not the argumentative kind, obviously. And out of respect, you're going to win every argument.
Mm.
But, I mean, come on. How do you even begin to choose? You mentioned Cantona, changed a club, changed the entire league, did things with his fish and his trawler and his kung fu kick and his practising and blah, blah, blah. Or, I mean, a giant, it's Michael. So Michael could be on his day, maybe was, the best keeper the world's ever seen. But they're giants. Mm. Henri. I
mean, no, they're all great. I'm talking about striker.
Strikers.
Someone with a chance in front of goal to put that ball in the net. If I had to have my life on anyone, it would be Sergio.
It's a big compliment.
Foreign.
Big compliment.
Otherwise, I would have Shearer.
I knew that was coming. Not Chris. Yeah, I want to give you a compliment. And I think I mentioned it early on. There was a stage at which, because I enjoy this so much, I can't even remember how we began talking, but I think you were interested in the fact that I was living and working in Spain. And at that stage, you were, you know, quality control at Spurs, making sure that the investment in where players were loaned or how the development was going, or also who should be signed. And it knocked me out, because even in Spain, people weren't really talking about Isco, currently at Real Madrid, multiple four times Champions League winner, so he's done quite nicely for himself. Can still play a bit. But you spotted him at Valencia reserves.
Mm.
How? Why?
The Valencia B team, I watched him three times on, I'd have to call the surface ash. It looked like Ash. I mean, you know, the pitches are not... I mean, it might have changed now, but it wasn't exceptional.
Yep.
And I went to watch a boy. Someone had rung me about another boy, and I think he might have been playing for Seville or someone. I can't even remember his name, because after 15 minutes, with no interest in anyone else other than this little kid who looked like a jockey. And I could not take my eyes off him. I couldn't take my eyes off him because the ball was a magnet to him. He knew when to stand still. He had that anticipation, what we spoke about earlier, of getting himself into areas where no one could mark him. He would put the centre forward on a penalty spot with the ball, with the goalkeeper to beat three times every game that I'd seen him. I just wanted to continue going back to watch him, and then I wanted to try and find a way that we could take him. I managed to achieve that, find a way we could take him by, I'm not sure of the agent's name now, but he would have been available, and he would have been no more than €500,000. And the club didn't want to do it because it was, they wanted to spend a little budget what they had at that time on first team players. Obviously, I mean, I got a PhD in hindsight. I mean, it's this, it's an incredible, it's an incredible miss.
I remember when you told me, and what you told me about him, and I don't know if we are or aren't allowed to say some of the specific things you told me about him, but just leading the horse to water, your employer didn't fully back you about, like, if this kid's in Valencia B, then he can't be as good as kind of, or he can't be worth that.
I think if you said to me, what's something like, take away the playing side or biggest attribute I have, I can see a player. And I can watch him, and you have to keep going, you have to double check, but I know that the kid is something special, and I wouldn't want to block out a pathway of any of the youth players, but I knew we had nothing like this.
Yeah.
You know, this is exceptional. It's not getting someone who's just a big athlete and you can produce through your academy. This kid was special, and I'd have to say there was probably in the three games I watched him, there would have been five or six of similar ilk players. I mean, they were, you're breeding them like you wouldn't believe. Pep famously said once, when they asked him about Jack Wilshere,
I was sitting there, we've got a dozen like that.
But you have. But
he meant it. He wasn't boasting.
This kid was ridiculous. I mean, his running gait is horrible. I mean, I've got to see him a few times because I followed his career now, and when I spent
his
a lot...
His bum does stick out a little bit.
I spent a lot of time in Malaga, and obviously he's from Malaga, and I've seen him a few times there, and I've watched him play there at the time. I mean, it's almost like a waste of time now. I mean, I saw a couple of years ago Tottenham were linked to him, and I think they were linked to him. Oh, I was there, or just like...
Phyllis Boyes wasn't too keen on a 10 that didn't run around like a...
But I went begrudgingly on his behalf to speak to the sporting director at Malaga.
At Malaga, who might
they
have been...
played Panathinaikos.
I was there. I was at that game.
They played Panathinaikos in the qualifying of the Champions League. Yeah. So I've had a meeting all day with the sporting director, right? If they don't win the game, I think Manuel was there. Pellegrini.
Well, he was. He was the coach.
If they're out of there, he comes.
Joaquin on one wing, Isco on the other, big Julio Cruz, and then Van Nistelrooy up front, Tulalan in the midfield, Kameni in goals, Jesus Gamas at right back. Good side.
Yeah. But he comes to Tottenham. But it was almost like I didn't want it to happen. And the reason I didn't want it to happen is that you'd already missed the boat. I mean, I spotted him £15 million ago. What's the point of taking him in there now? You know, it's almost like, well, why didn't you back me then? Why didn't you trust me? I mean, there's a more dramatic one than that. I mean, Isco is the one I follow.
More dramatic.
Aubameyang was my...
Oh, really?
I have a guy, Seamus Brady, who's an Irish fellow, who's an analyst guy, and he used to work for me on the development side, and I took him wherever I go. So I went to watch Sandro. We'd signed Sandro, and I watched to watch Sandro play for Brazil against the Gabon.
Oh, okay.
In Saudi.
Yeah.
Or Abu Dhabi, or wherever it was. And then after 5 minutes, I've seen this kid, like a skinny little kid, like with breakneck pace, like ridiculous, running down a wing for the Gabon. And I used to think, I knew we're not in the back in them days where you think, well, you go to the African nations and we'll nick loads of players because no one knows about them. Because it was almost more modern times when everyone knows about players.
Yeah.
But I thought, this one just might have got through the radar. So I was straight on my phone. I'm in the ground. So I said, this kid's got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And I said, Shay, check him out. See where he is. And I was speaking to my analysis guy. He said to me, Tim, he's at AC Milan. He said, yeah, but he's on a loan at St Etienne. I said, okay. So I said, I love him, mate. I love him. So I spoke to the head of recruitment at Tottenham when I come back. And I said, this kid. He said, no. Well, they always do. Yeah, they don't want to. They, if you mention a player they don't know, they can't. It's almost like below them. Yeah. No, I know him. Oh, okay, what do you know about him? So I used to put him on the spot because they know, like, I know where the bodies are buried. Yeah, so he goes, well, he's... And he can't wait to get to his phone, yeah, and have a little Google up. Well, no, I've had a report on him, and they said that he's got no end product. I said, he's developing. I said, young kid, he might not. This is probably a good out where I could say, oh, okay, all right, no problem. But it's worth keeping an eye on because the kid's ridiculous pace. So we only got Gareth. I said, but he's another option. So I said to Daniel, I couldn't help it. I just said, Daniel, there's a kid I saw the other night. I said, we've got to track him and see if we can get him. Blah, blah, think of him. He knows him. I said, but does he? I said, oh, I think it's worth tracking him. Anyway, he scored and scored and scored for St Etienne every single week. So I said to the head of scouting there, the kid you're talking about, it must be the wrong kid to what I'm talking about, yeah? I said, because he's scoring so many goals, he's so many assists. I said, he's got no end product. I said, I'm telling you, this kid, and in a minute, it's going to be too expensive for us. Daniel says to me, get him up. We had a manager there who didn't want him, Villas-Boas. He said to me, get him to come to Tottenham. So I got him with his dad to come to Tottenham, sat there with a chief scout in the old White Hart Lane, executive box looking over the ground. Fantastic. Imagine now he
the player's going to see it.
He was there, dad. I'm coming.
Yep.
And I sold him there and he couldn't understand why the manager wasn't there. Which is strange.
It's a fair point, by the
course.
If you're going to come, you're going to. What are you expecting the team to think about me?
But we sold it. I'm.
Yeah.
I'm a technical.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, and I'm. And this way we see.
My respect for the Aubameyang family goes up because the nose is good.
Yeah, but the dad was, you know, he knew how good the kid was and what he could be. It could have happened. I'm not sure what the price would have been, but it wouldn't have been 10 mil. He went to Dortmund, and the rest is history.
You were on the goal line. It must be deeply frustrating when that happens. And from my stance, given your talent, I don't really see why you would go back into coaching and management when that talent that you've patently got and was exhibited to me when you said something on the phone that caught me out, but it's gone. That's much rarer in football, to be good at that.
Yeah. A lot of the time, though, Graham, I think, is that it's not about spotting them. It's about the development of the player as well.
Okay.
I could spot someone and say, this kid is top drawer, and I could take him into somewhere. Let's use Harry Kane as an example. It would be a good topic, because I've known Harry since he's 12.
Yeah.
He's never a podium player. Never. Yeah. But he had an attitude which was different. Yeah. And not only that, he was growing physically. And he was a little bit puppy fat, Harry. All of a sudden, it was like streaming off of him. Physically, he was changing. He was getting stronger in his running. But the mentality was still the same. Never, ever wavered. In Harry's mind, he is Lionel Messi in the nicest possible way. And you want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same token, he knows that he can continually improve. And he now doesn't feel like he's got a ceiling. He knows now he can continually improve to get better and better himself. Everyone I loaned him to. The games programme in England, I think we spoke about this before, is no good. They have to play men's football. The Premier League have tried everything they can, but you cannot replicate men's competitive football.
Not enough pressure, not competitive enough.
And they're playing... I could go now, I could play in one of them under-23 games. Every game looks the same. Whatever game it is, I could tell you how it's going to look and how it's going to pan out. The centre-half's never had the ball, no one ever tackles. It's 1,000 passes for each team. It's boring. You want to leave. There's no competitive nature. So I used to say, no more of that. If we feel like they're good players, we loan them. So I loaned them out to play men's football, whether it be the National League, League 2, League 1, Championship, A lot of them wanted to go.
Problems, you're going to get bruises, you're going to play bad pitches, the crowd will be on your back, and you develop or you fade.
And it means something.
Yeah.
They do that in League One, where the guy's got to pay his mortgage and he needs the wind bones to be able to do that. They're going to get him by the scruff of the neck, up by the wall, and tell him he cannot do that because he's a flash kid from Tottenham and he's this. Harry had never had that mentality. He always had that responsibility. Mm. We exposed him to men's football. But I'd have to tell you, every club I loaned him to, every manager said he would not be a Premier League player. Right? Now, if I listened to him and I took them as... But I knew... You're absolutely right. He's not a Premiership player now. Mm. Will he be a Premiership player? Absolutely be a Premiership player. But could have wrote him off.
What did they doubt? Pace or finishing?
Everything. They couldn't. I said to him, I used to ask them. Sometimes they ain't got a lot of time. What they haven't got to do, that's the only downside of it, is they haven't got time to develop that individual.
Yeah.
All they're worried about is winning games.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that you need to try and do it. And I'd say to all development coaches out there, you need to try and do both if you can. Get him to play his games there, but get him a couple of weeks back with you to work at stuff. And we, thankfully, we just managed to balance it out and get that done. And he continually improved. And then he got the games programme, which was competitive, and it took him to another level.
We spoke recently to somebody who'd coached him, and pardon me for forgetting him, and he talked a lot about the extra finishing work and the demand to...
Who would that be? Alex Inglethorpe, maybe?
I was speaking about... I interviewed Trent Alexander-Arnold in Switzerland in the summer. And boy, he talked about Alex and the work he did on him when it was vital that instead of being a midfielder, he would convert to right back. Because I think at the time, Brendan had said, I need a right back. And they'd said, listen, we can make this kid. And he said, Alex put him through hell, but exactly what you've been talking about, to test him, to show him, to teach him, then to assimilate and revise and start again.
Yeah.
And he said it was horrendous.
Yeah.
Trent did.
Yeah.
But he said it made me, and it made me ready.
Yeah.
So they did that within their own system.
Yeah.
Differently. So it was a different manner, but to the same end purpose as you're talking about. But with Harry, it was talking about working on weaker foot, ball in from side all the time, busy. he had exactly, you know, James's attitude. It changed. And I remember talking to Pleaty as well about one day when he saw him playing on loan. I can't remember at Leicester, on loan, and for some reason he was playing at Old Trafford, I can't remember what it was. And Fleet said that he noticed that somehow or other, Harry was reading things quicker, therefore he was getting to things quicker, that maybe his pace hadn't changed, but suddenly, because he too had doubted, he admitted that he doubted about whether he'd reached top level or not, and he went, oh, where did that come from? That's a change. Mm. How you do that? Well, I suppose it means that Harry's got not just determination, but he's got a decent football brain too, if he's learned how to anticipate better.
Mm. And he's had to come through a lot of adversity, that's the thing. I mean, no one ever fancied him at Tottenham. And he knows that. Deep down, he knows Daniel Levy wanted to sell him. He made a good decision not to. Because what they wanted to accept for him, Harry, since he's been 10 at that club, has probably ate as much as that in the canteen. Mm. So it wasn't even worth it. And the kid was already a pretty player, but it was Baldini who put it into Daniel's mind. Franco come in and said, this kid is not going to be... Daniel always wanted players CL. They were going to be Champions League, and Franco told him he wasn't even PL. So I obviously got in between and just said to him, tell me what you can do, what you can't do.
So that's a source of big satisfaction then?
Yeah, he wanted Morata to come in because Morata was a different level to him. And I obviously, keep talking about sliding doors moment. It was one for Harry Kane. If I don't take the job, he doesn't play for Tottenham. Because, and thankfully for Harry, Pochettino took over after me.
Mm.
Because Pochettino, with the game time as well, took him to another level.
Mm-hmm.
If Jose would have come in after me, Harry Kane would never be seen. Because he hadn't rehearsed enough for Jose. He wants ready-made players.
He does.
And it wasn't obvious at that stage that he was going to be what he is now. But
because Jose could do with a word with Dave Williams, because sometimes what Jose's doing is for Jose, not just for the club. It's my opinion, but I'm absolutely sure of it. Well, Spurs then don't just owe you a big debt about Harry Kane.
also about the revenue that Harry Kane has generated for the club by getting them to the Champions League, getting them all the way to the final. Win or not win, the money now is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Through the group again. That'll be, because they are through the group, aren't they?
Yeah.
In fact, they might even have, well, no, they
played Leverkusen. Munich,
play Leverkusen. That's a, because of this season's revenue distribution, that's a 56 million half season already because of the, so. Daniel?
No, he's the kid's got to take all the credit. He's exceptional. For my liking, I was just talking earlier to someone who's a journalist in Newcastle, talking about Bentaleb because he's one of my boys.
Yeah. He loved his attitude, didn't he? You loved Bentaleb's attitude.
Loved him. Loved him. I just said, listen, if his strength is his weakness, his emotion.
He cares too much.
Yeah. But I'd rather have it that way and rein him in. Than try and, because you're never going to get them to care more. So I'd rather saying, listen, stay at this, just, and that's why he falls out with people. But I don't mind him falling out with people. He fell out with Poch because he wasn't prepared to be second best to anyone. He wanted to play every week. And I think it's a good trait.
Yeah.
And obviously that's happened at Schalke as well. But in the meantime, the kids earned a lot of money for Tottenham, played in the Champions League for Schalke a number of years, and now he's going to go up there and he'll be very good.
You bet that him and Steve Bruce will get on.
Yeah.
It's because people, I don't know what, but Steve is A, very able as a coach, but B, he's for all his affable, nice, or a winner, tough man. I think they'll get on, I think. All I'll say is that this has been fun. We've used up a lot of your time. I hope that when people are watching this, they're going, yeah, you want to be coach, manager, whatever. I think people should go and have to have Tim Sherwood at my club running the development because people that can do what you can do are very rare, and football spends a lot of money completely screwing it up. So get back and do what you're good at.
I love it. I love that development thing. I think the problem with it is that there's too many chiefs at clubs now, and they've got other agendas, you know, and rather than just doing what's best for the player and ultimately best for the club, you know, they all got their hands out.
Yeah, everybody watching knows what you're talking about. There's too many snouts in the trough. But sometimes when it's purified down to this level about talented football man, sees football player, helps them get the right path, it can be, it's the reason that we all still love the game. We don't love the game because of the big money or the big fanfare on the TV. It's football. We keep loving it, whatever warts it grows. So long may that last. Meantime, until you start doing that job again, thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.